Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joe DiBiase, Rachel Donner here on your Friday edition of the Locked On NHL podcast. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Remember, if you are listening to us on the Odyssey, Spotify, or Apple Podcast app, you can check us out on YouTube, and you can watch the show now on our YouTube channel, Locked On NHL. And we actually have hockey to talk about, Rachel, because you watched a couple of games last night, and we got our first look at the TNT broadcast.
We did. It was an adventure, I will say. I think they started off pretty strong. I thought it was a banging intro. I'm really into the graphics that they're using. Mm-hmm. And the score bug is very clean and also helpful. They show shots on goal, and then they have these like pop-outs for different stuff like who's on ice and other little things, and they go away very quickly so as to not be obtrusive. Okay. So I was pretty pleased with all of that. Now, then once the broadcast kind of got going for the Flyers game, we had Kenny Albert and Eddie Olczyk with Keith Jones between the benches. Mm. And
is that where it started to fall apart?
No, I mean, I think those guys, I mean, you know what you're getting with those guys, right? They're all known entities. And I think they were really excited that it was a new broadcast. And so I think they were lighter and, you know, more jovial than they normally would be. And so that was kind of nice, I guess. And, you know, Keith Jones getting used to the quote unquote Pierre role as opposed to being in studio. I think he liked it. I think he was having fun with it, and it was good for him to interact with the, you know, play-by-play and color guys as opposed to just being a studio guy, you know, like talking head. I think it's more suited to him, honestly. Mm-hmm. Then things maybe started to take a turn. So in the first intermission of the game, when they cut back to the studio. So we've got Liam McHugh, Rick Tocchet, and Anson Carter in studio.
No Gretzky last night.
No Gretzky at least for this game. I didn't get to see much into the second game, so I don't know what was going on there. But they just had this like weird thing going on with the chairs that were unevenly spaced and off center, which was bothering me the whole time. And I don't know like what the deal was that they couldn't just like during a commercial break adjust where the chairs were relative to the camera position. But anyway, hopefully they will work on that part of it. And then there was the, I think, attempt to make things a little bit more light and fun, like some other sports, especially you see like NFL broadcasts where, you know, the people in the studio will get up and demonstrate a play. So on their little like 4-foot by 4-foot fake football field.
Right.
And so they just sort of got up behind the desk, and Rick Tocchet was trying to demonstrate what NHL players should do to avoid being cross-checked because of all like the new enforcement on the cross-check rules supposedly this year. And there were two cross-checking penalties called in the first period. And so this is why it came up. And it was just this awkward like thing that was maybe slightly inappropriate that happened. I think it was like a combination of awkward and funny, but I do like the combination of those guys in the studio. I think they're really good together. And I like Rick Tocchet in studio a lot more than I thought I would. So that part of it is good. But then in the second period of the game, it just got kind of worse from there. They had massive technical issues.
I saw one screen grab of like the camera feed was like,
yes,
the top of the screen was on the bottom and then the rest of it was above it, kind of was going on.
Yeah. So for those of us who grew up with analog television, we could tell you that it looked like a vertical hold issue. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a throwback to those days. And then, you know, the pick just like completely dropped out for little bits. And then it sounded like a distant radio broadcast for moments. And some moments it was like pixelated, and it was just, Oh, and then at one point, I think some of the more like above camera angles weren't working, and they only had like the rink level camera working, which is, I think, more of a handheld camera or a steady cam kind of setup. So it was, you know, you didn't get a full breadth angle. I think that camera operator did an amazing job because they were the only one on for a significant period of the game. But they, yeah, you know, preseason for them too, is what I'll say.
They probably even said it on the broadcast at least once.
Yeah,
so, okay, it's preseason for us too. I'm looking at the picture now of like where they're sitting on the desk. And I'm just confused. Like, why is Liam McHugh so far to the right? Why?
Yeah,
like, you're right. The spacing is weird. I would have drove me crazy too.
Yeah, I will say that as far as like the technical issues during the game broadcast itself, Kenny Albert and Eddie Olczyk like handled it like a champ. Like, they were absolute pros in terms of being able to compensate for the technical difficulties and apologizing for it. And so, you know, I was impressed by that.
Yeah. The graphics look really clean, too, from what I'm looking at right now as
Absolutely.
Also, your first look at Rasmus Ristolainen, I think, my guy from here in Buffalo. There was one video, and this might not have been fair of the whole game in totality that he played. There was one video in particular where he just, this is something he did in Buffalo a lot. He got caught puck watching, and he ended up like in the corner while Brad Marchand was in front of the net. So, I don't
know. It's true.
Yeah. Are we getting driven crazy by him yet? Or
No, because I thought he made some really good outlet passes in other aspects of the game. And it seems like he and Travis Sanheim, who are D partners right now, I think they just need to build up chemistry and communication. Because to me, that individual play, while it's something that Risto might have done in the past, like until you get a system together with your D partner and get that communication going, like, you can't prevent that sort of stuff from happening because you both go where you naturally want to go.
Sure.
And that's fixable.
Right. Big addition for the Flyers this offseason. Their blue line in general, Ristolainen and Ryan Ellis.
Yeah. Ellis looks so good in the first preseason game. I'm so happy.
I wish the Sabres were a good enough team to think about trading for a guy like that, but hopefully they'll get back there. So, we had some preseason games last night. We've got an update on Jack Eichel coming your way. We've got Jonathan Toews returning to the ice. We've got a contract extension for a head coach, a couple other injury stuff, and some new contracts that we'll all dive into in just a little bit. But the big story in not just the NHL, not just even North America, but all of hockey globally right now is the racist act that happened in the Ukrainian Hockey League by Andrei Denisikin of the Ukrainian Hockey League. And he was suspended 2 days ago for three games for making a racist gesture to defenseman Jalen Schmerich of HC Donbass of the Ukrainian Hockey League, who is a Detroit native. And three-game suspension is the equivalent of an $1,800 fine. Rachel, I'm sure you've seen a lot of reaction. The team itself that Schmerich, who was the victim here, plays for, they even tweeted out, like, $1,800 for racism? Are you kidding me? And you've seen a lot of the sports world reacting. It's grotesque. It's unbelievable. And I think Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, I think, was the first one that I saw tweet it, so I'll give him the credit that not that many others haven't, but, like, I can't believe the IIHF shouldn't step in here and do, I don't know what you do, but I feel like you have to do something.
You absolutely do. I want to clarify that suspension, though, because it was a 3-game suspension and a 10-game suspension on top of it. So he got games because he got booted from the game. And in that league, that just gives you mandatory 3 games, no matter what, if you get kicked out of a game. Then they gave him a 10-game suspension on top of that, which, according to their league, I guess, from what they're saying, is the maximum allowable under their rules for if you do something racist or, you know, offensive or something like that. The problem here is that what he did, what Deniskin did, was so over the top that I don't think they could have imagined that when they set those rules in terms of the maximum suspensions. I mean, this is just aggressively racist behavior with the gestures that he was doing toward Jalen. And I think that's where it comes from, that it's jarring for people to see it, that blatantly racist kind of behavior out there, that, you know, we kind of are lulled into this complacency of this sort of thing doesn't happen anymore, but it does happen. And you've seen like other players of color reacting and saying, oh yeah, I mean, this is one of the worst I've seen, but stuff like this happens all the time. And, you know, Wayne Simmons even commented afterward that, you know, he was disgusted by all of it, and it makes him question whether he's going to allow his kids to play hockey because he doesn't want them to experience that kind of thing.
Mm. So I've seen stories that Schmerich is getting interest. Now he's a Detroit native. He's getting interest from the AHL. I saw two different things. I saw on Insider Trading last night on TSN that Schmerich is planning to play in the Champions Hockey League next week, which is it's basically, if you're a soccer fan, it's basically the Champions League for hockey. It's like the top teams from each league in Europe that play each other. So he said he's pulling in that next week. And I guess that would line up with what he said on Instagram, that he will not play another game in the UHL unless Dennis Seekin is removed from the league. And I guess, again, this is him playing for the team. It's not technically him playing in the league. So maybe he does come back, maybe to North America. Maybe he does take one of these AHL teams up on their offer, because, I mean, if that league is not going to treat that situation seriously, if they're not going to, sometimes you have to go for unprecedented. Sometimes you have to go above what you've set out as the maximum. And that hasn't happened here. And again, other than outside interference, it sounds like from the IIHF, that's also not going to happen. There was a GM of the UHL the other day that was very critical of the league on Twitter, and then he got fired. So to me, that also says, like, is this league really, like, are they just, to me, it made it sound like they're only doing it to be able to get people off their backs, and they don't really even see it as that serious of an issue. And to me, if I were any American, if I were any person that was playing in that league, I would want out. And now you've got agents too, by the way, tweeting that, like, I will never send a player there again.
Oh yeah. And you know, the IIHF is in a little bit of a bind here, because, you know, they've said they're horrified by the behavior and they wanted the Ukraine Hockey Federation to do more, but, you know, their hands are tied with what they have the capability to do. So the only things that they can really do is sanction the league as a whole in terms of not allowing them to play in international competitions, or saying the Ukraine, like, national team can't play in certain competitions. But, you know, they can't really do anything within the operations of the league itself. It's just kind of like, gotcha. The only real option is to kind of starve them out.
Right. All right, so that's what's going on overseas right now. Kind of an awkward transition here. There's really no other way to do it, but I do want to tell you guys, before we get to Eichel and Taze and Pettersson and Hughes and all of that, about Fantrax, Locked On NHL's number one source for fantasy hockey. The free NHL Fantasy Hockey League Manager is the most customizable, easy to use, and feature-rich platform in the industry. I can attest to that. My fantasy hockey league just moved from another site to Fantrax because we wanted to do a slow draft, which is essentially you have 8 hours to pick. It goes over the course of a week or two. And the site we were on didn't even provide that option. Fantrax gave you like a billion different options for a draft format like that. Sign up for free today and you get a special offer for Locked On NHL fans. You'll be entered to win an official NHL signed Nathan MacKinnon jersey. Simply go to Fantrax.com/LockedOn and sign up today. It's the top dynasty hockey fantasy format in the industry. Have you been hosting your season-long leagues on another platform? No problem. Fantrax can import any of your current leagues for free and customize if needed. Among the most trusted names in fantasy sports, offering hockey, football, baseball, basketball, college football, golf, soccer, and NASCAR. If there's anything lacking in your current fantasy league manager, Fantrax likely has it. Again, sign up for free today and be entered to win an official NHL-signed Nathan MacKinnon jersey. Simply go to Fantrax.com/lockedon and sign up today. That's Fantrax.com/lockedon. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. Joe DiBiase and Rachel Donner here on the Locked On NHL podcast. All right, let's start this little news segment here with Jack Eichel in Buffalo. Now, it was kind of just a 4 or 5 second blurb that Darren Dreger had on the previously mentioned insider trading segment that they do on TSN on Thursday night. But a big step forward for a potential Eichel trade in that the Sabres have now, or they are now, allowing other teams to see Eichel's medical history. Now, you might have just assumed that was going to happen or that has happened, but until yesterday, it hadn't. And we were trying to figure out why it hadn't happened, because it was in part holding up a trade. You've got the player who won't get the surgery the team wants. You got the team that won't allow the player to get the surgery he wants. And you've got other teams telling the Sabres, we're not trading for him until we see the medicals. We're not just going to do this blindly. So something had to give. This was the obvious, I think, next step, and it has happened. But just to throw it out there, that might be a stepping stone towards a potential Eichel trade now, finally, because it's been a stalemate for months now at this point.
That was absolutely crazy to me that they had not allowed other teams to look at the medical records yet. I mean, if you're trying to shop a guy in this situation, like, that's step one.
We couldn't even figure out what the motivation might have been for that. Because even like the Blues, like Vladimir Tarasenko, who they were trying to trade this offseason and maybe still are, he had his shoulder injury. And the moment he was on the trade market, the Blues were telling everybody, you can see the medicals, and even talk to the player. And the Sabres just haven't been that open about it. And I think that has played a part, obviously, into why he was not traded this offseason. Not the biggest part. I think the neck injury in general and the surgery dispute is why, but the little update there. Jonathan Toews back on the ice in the preseason against the Detroit Red Wings yesterday. And by all accounts, it sounded like he looked great. Like, he looked at like the Jonathan Toews of old. He was skating well. Did you see any of that game? You said you saw the late game after the Flyers game, right?
This was the night beforehand.
Oh, this was 2 nights.
So I did see a little bit of it, but yeah, he played almost 23 minutes of that game, which is like a big workload for somebody who hasn't played a game in over a year. I mean, maybe he was eager to, and they'll cut it down a little bit for the rest of the preseason. But yeah, I thought he looked pretty good out there. He had an assist in the game, and they played against Detroit. They lost that game in a shootout, whatever that means in the preseason. But, I think that it was just good for him to be out there and kind of make people more confident that when he says that he feels good, he actually does.
And that's going to be big for them, that he feels healthy and that he is able to get through an entire season, because they need him. They need him badly. I mean, they don't have a lot of center depth behind him, and they traded for Marc-Andre Fleury, and they traded for Seth Jones. Like, they want to win. They're going for it. And he's going to be he's one of the most important players on that team, obviously. So good for Chicago. The Toews is back. Sheldon Keefe signs a 2-year extension to remain head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs past this year. I didn't know that he was in a contract year, that he only had 1 year left on his deal. But knowing the Toronto media, I probably would have found that out at some point soon, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. And I think that it says a lot, first off, that it was a 2-year deal and not something longer that you might typically see with a head coach extension. There have been so many questions after last season and how they flamed out in the playoffs, and did they have confidence in him? And they've sort of said they did, but given that he was in a contract year, it could have been hanging over his head for the entire season and been the story in Toronto media, which would not have been ideal for the team or the business or any of that. So I think it was smart of them to just get that off the table to start off with, but also keep him on a short leash because, again, he has not proven success. This is his first full 82 game season because of COVID. He hasn't coached a full season yet. So I think this is an absolutely fair deal for him.
Yeah. I do think, though, like, you make a good point about it not being like a 4 or 5 year deal. Because I would still think Well, maybe it doesn't have to be him. They would do something and it could be him. If they were to get eliminated in the first round again, I don't know. Would he be completely safe? I would feel,
no.
If I were him, I'd feel less comfortable than if I had that 4 or 5 year deal, obviously. Like, 2 years doesn't, to me, prevent the Leafs from thinking we can't afford to do this. So the pressure will still be on him, but right, it won't be a distraction. And at the very least, the bar for him to clear to remain the head coach of Toronto Maple Leafs might have been lowered a little bit with this extension.
There was some conspiracy theory out there that they did it also because that documentary about the Leafs was going to show something really bad that they wanted to mitigate, but I don't know if I believe that.
Okay. I don't think I've read about this conspiracy theory, so maybe I'll have to get up on that. I like Keith, by the way. I wanted the Sabres to hire him a couple years ago. I think they interviewed him, but he knew he was the next in line for the Leafs job, so he wasn't going anywhere. Jacob Vrana in Detroit, out 4 months with a shoulder injury. He was awesome last year for the Detroit Red Wings after he was traded from Washington in that big Anthony Mantha trade, where the Red Wings also got a first-round pick coming back along with Vrana. And I thought it was crazy because I thought Vrana was arguably a better player than Mantha. He had 8 goals and 3 assists last year in 11 games for a point a game. Detroit trying to turn a corner a little bit. I don't know how likely that is to happen, but they're trying to, with Steve Yzerman in place now. And Vrana was going to be a big part of that. He was skating on a top line with Dylan Larkin. I love the player. I think this is a big loss for them.
It's huge. And I mean, I guess it's not a secret if I'm saying it right now, but Detroit was sort of my secret team that I was going to keep an eye on this year, just because I agree with you. I think Yzerman is a wizard and he's doing some really good things in Detroit. I like what they're doing with their prospect pool as well. And so I was excited when they got Vrana because I thought that would be a really good kickstart to make this season like not feel like a building year. Like, it feels like that they were working towards something, as opposed to just stagnating and waiting. So I hope this doesn't affect them too much, but you have to think it will.
Yeah, he was skating on the top line with Dylan Larkin and Tyler Bertuzzi, who, by the way, is unvaccinated and won't be able to play games in Canada, so they're going to lose him for those games. Philip Zadina, Adam Ernie are like the right wingers that are now candidates to be playing on their top line. That's not strong. Also, by the way, this puts Vrana's status for the Olympics in doubt. He would have 100% been on that Czech Republic team, and he still could 4 months from now. So that's lining up really right with the start, or just before the start of the Olympics. So we'll see if he's able to make it back in time for that. That is assuming they would even have the Olympics still. That's basically the top news stories that are going on in the NHL over the last couple of days. We're going to switch over to Vancouver when we come back. We've got some big deals on the way for Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. Before we do that, though, I want to take a minute to talk to you about Built Bar, my favorite protein bar. They've got an assortment of great flavors: cherry barcia, double chocolate, German chocolate, cookies and cream, strawberry, salted caramel. Not only are Built Bars the best tasting protein bar out there, but they are healthy too. Check out the macros: 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. Go to built.com today and use the promo code locked on, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use the promo code locked on for 15% off at built.com.
It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now turning to football as teams are back on the gridiron to start the football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. You can get all the updated odds, props, and contests, including online's biggest $500,000 NFL mega contest at BetOnline. You can head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up and receive a 100% welcome bonus with the promo code LOCKEDON. And right now, they also have a ton of odds up for preseason NHL betting. You can put your wagers down on Stanley Cup, playoff teams, and division winners. And we, on this very show, did a rundown of the over-under bets from betonline.ag for each team's point total for the season. So check those shows out and then go to BetOnline and make your wagers. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports, from football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait. Take advantage of all the great offers available for that 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Joe DiBiase and Rachel Donner here on the Locked On NHL podcast. By the way, real quick on BetOnline, they posted a bunch of new stuff on their website. They now have over-under for specific player stats. You can bet on over-under 914 save percentage for Aiden Hill. That's next level betting. I'm not quite to that.
Yeah, I don't know.
They also, though, this one's kind of curious. They posted odds on the next NHL expansion / relocation city. So you could bet on, like, Quebec City and Houston are co-favorites to be the next cities that get NHL teams.
That's interesting to me.
That's a long-term bet, though. You could bet that, and then you are waiting a decade for that to get paid out to not be. Hamilton, Kansas City, Milwaukee, and Charlotte are the other cities listed, by the way.
This is a total audible here, but
go for it.
I have been intrigued by this whole concept in baseball with the sister city concept for the Rays in Tampa and Montreal. Is that something you think could work in hockey?
Ooh, I guess it'd have to be the absolute perfect two cities for it.
I mean, not Sudbury Thunder Bay, but
yeah, no, I don't think that. I don't know, because the Expos did it way back when, and it didn't go well, so I don't know if there's a lot of precedent of that and having it work. I think it's maybe just used as a bargaining tool to get, like, a new arena in the first city. Like, would that ever be someone's, like, plan A for how they're going to play their games? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it's not a great idea. And I'm trying to, like, even in my mind, like, compute, like, what two cities could that possibly work for? I guess Quebec City and, well, Montreal's not giving you any games for the Habs. Two Canadian cities maybe could pull it off, just because, like, if you did that, if you told Saskatoon, who built an NHL-level arena 20 years ago with the hopes that they were going to get an NHL team, hasn't happened. It's not going to happen. And you've got Quebec City, who's been desperately trying to get a team back for 25 years now. If you go to those two cities and say, you are both not getting a team, but we think together you can financially support this one franchise, like, would they do something like that? I don't think the league would go for it, but, or would be exploring that, but I guess in theory it could work, is what I'll say.
Yeah, the only real true sticking point for me is the Players Association, because these people have to have homes, right? So, like, which city do these players live in? But I don't know. It intrigues me, but the hurdles are high.
Yeah. Okay, speaking of Canadian cities, that's literally my segue here. I'm going for it. the Vancouver Canucks yesterday, they're not official yet, but it sounds as though Rick DeWally tweeted this out. One of the Canucks beat reporters, Darren Dreger, had this last night. There were a bunch of reports about the specifics of the details, but we've got contracts on the way, it sounds like, for Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. We are weeks away from the start of the season. Those are Vancouver's their top forward and arguably their top defenseman that were not yet signed for the beginning of the year. Three-year deal under... Let me get this right. Sorry, Hughes, 6-year deal worth slightly above $7.75 million is what we have for him. And then Pettersson, a 3-year deal where it would be under $8 million. So what's your immediate takeaway when you saw, one, that they were signing, and two, like, what the terms of those deals were?
I mean, I think it makes sense in terms of the term for each of them. And, you know, that's kind of been the conventional wisdom, that Pettersson was going to get a shorter term and Quinn Hughes was going to take a longer deal to get the higher salary per year. That was kind of the deal that they were going to make, but that they weren't going to get either of them, or at least for Quinn Hughes, because he's a defenseman, you know, that $9 million contract that all the other free agent defensemen got. So this was kind of the compromise for him.
Yeah, it was a comparable deal to, in terms of the money, to closer to Rasmus Dahlin than it was to, obviously, like Seth Jones, who made 9+, or Kale McCarr. And this takes Hughes up to age 27. So I think really that's what the league's becoming when players are searching for these contracts, is they're projecting out and thinking, how many times can I cash in? And Hughes, by not signing an 8-year deal, you take him up to age 30, and now it's close. You know, now he might not get another 8-year deal. He might have to look for like a 4 or 5-year deal. Whereas he signs a 6-year deal now, when he's 27, he'll be 28 by then. Basically, he's going to turn 22 in a few days here. When he's 28 years old, you could still cash in on that big long-term deal. You're still in your prime of your career. So I thought it made sense for Hughes. And then Pettersson, same thing. He'll be 25 years old, and he'll get a mega extension if he's still playing the way he did in his first 2 years, and even in stretches last year as well. And obviously, this is big for Vancouver. They want to win. Jim Benning is on the hot seat there. He knows he's got to win as general manager there this year, I think.
You say that, and then he keeps coming back year after year. So
right, I want that to be the case. Like, people write that that's the case, but you're right. Is it the case? It might not be. But you would think that that's a team that needs to show them something, or show the owners something this year. And they weren't going to do anything without those two players. I still don't like their chances, even with them. What do you remember what you did for the Canucks and their over-unders? I forget what your status was on them for this year.
I vaguely recall that I was with them and Calgary. Okay. I think Calgary, I did the over, in Vancouver, I did the under, if I recall.
Okay. I think the one benefit that they will have is that they are in a bad division, and I could see them getting into the playoffs that way, but as I could for a lot of the teams in that division. Like, I think Vegas is in, and I think Edmonton is going to be in, but you never know because they have their off years. And then it's between everybody else for that third spot. And could it be the Canucks? I could see it. Could it be the Kraken? Yes. Almost anyone other than the Sharks. I would be pretty surprised if the Sharks or the Ducks did it. But almost anybody else in that division, I could see it happening for. All right, Rachel, what do you guys got going on over on Locked On Flyers over the last couple of days? People can check out.
Yeah, mostly just talent evaluation in this preseason between, you know, all the new veteran players and some of the kids. We had a lot of injuries, Kevin Hayes being the big one, and, you know, trying to sort out the center situation. So we're talking a lot about that. We've got another preseason game against the Caps coming this weekend. So, yeah, lots of good stuff coming up.
All right. Locked On Sabres, we focused on the goaltending situation today. Most people, including us, were thinking that Craig Anderson at 40 years old was going to be this team's starting netminder to start the year, but played the whole game on Thursday night. Star goalie prospect Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen was looking really strong, and it seems more possible than we thought before that he, at 22 years old, will just be given the Sabres starting job on opening night. With Anderson being his backup. So we talked about the goalie situation. If you want to hear more about that, head over to Locked On Sabres. And I'll be back on the podcast Tuesday with Mike DiStefano of Locked On Leafs. Me and Rachel will talk to you again next Friday here on the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.